don't you fix your little problems and light this candle?
He's right. Let's light this candle.
He surely is. Light the candle.
Yes. Resume the countdown.
HCC's Hawk Radio. At 1 minute past 3 o'clock here in the Eastern Time Zone, it's happy hour. Happier hour, because if it's Friday afternoon, then we're live, broadcasting out from the Ybor City campus of Hillsborough Community College in Tampa, Florida. Today, November 15th, 2024. I am the aging teen idol, Mike Frazier, and this is the Tampa Turntable Sessions. From now until 4 Eastern, I'll be taking us back as we explore several popular instrumental music titles. This hour, music titles. Instrumental music that had an impact on the charts and popular music when first released. Instrumental music that, as you'll hear, and more times than not, was the biggest or the only hit from the artist or band that I'm going to play. Instrumental music that contains no proper verse or chorus. And have you noticed I keep saying instrumental music and not instrumental songs? That's because technically, to be called a song, it must have both lyrics and a chorus. Otherwise, well, it's instrumental music. And now you know. But I'll probably slip and at some point call one or more of them songs, like I almost just did right there. Part one today of influential instrumentals on this Tampa Turntable Sessions. In fact, my behind-the-scenes assistant production team have each heard one of their chosen instrumentals already get played. Research producer Bill Hendry, he won the toss, and I opened the show with his 1959 selection from Dave Baby Cortez. It's a quirky tune called The Happy Organ. It was the first of only 25 total instrumentals so far to have ever reached the number one spot on Billboard Magazine's Hot 100 chart, and that's what we're celebrating today. The Billboard Hot 100 chart, incidentally, made its debut on August 4th, 1958. And only 9 months later, The Happy Organ went to number one on May 11th, 1959. The song, done in a single take at the New York City recording studio of the independent label Clock Records, happened when Dave Cortez sat down and played a Hammond B3 organ for his very first time, actually. The Happy Organ would be the only top five and number one title that Dave Baby Cortez would ever have. Also previously played was a selection as handpicked by our not bored board operator producer Josh Pendowski. Mason Williams with Classical Gas. Not that type of gas either. Classical Gas, a title that here in America peaked at number two in August 1968 and stayed there for two straight weeks. Directly underneath Hello I Love You by The Doors, which happened to be at the number one spot, preventing it from getting up there to it. And although Classical Gas never went to number one on the Hot 100, it did win three 1969 Grammys. The first for Best Instrumental Composition, another for being the Best Contemporary Pop Performance Instrumental, and the third for the Best Instrumental Arrangement. Fun fact about Mason Williams, he wrote Classical Gas. When he wrote it, he was also serving as the head writer on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour television variety program at the same time. The Brothers Smothers, Dick and Tommy Smothers, liked the instrumental piece enough that they allowed Williams to premiere the composition on the show as one of the first ever, as one of the first ever produced music videos, ever to air. The video for Classical Gas would air several more times over several more episodes on the Smothers Brothers show. Worth mentioning about Classical Gas by Mason Williams is that it was produced by legendary television soundtrack composer Mike Post, famous for the themes to Hill Street Blues, L.A. Law, The A-Team, and The Rockford Files, Magnum P.I., and L.A. Law, among many others that he did. And speaking of producers and the word legendary, underneath of me, you're hearing Sirius, Eye in the Sky instrumental from 1982 by the Alan Parsons Project, as chosen by TTS Senior Assistant Research Producer and fellow native Chicagoan, Michaela Williams. When I asked her why she chose it, she said four words: Chicago Bulls, the 90s. As Sirius was played during announcer Ray Clay's pregame player introductions, at all Bulls home games. A couple of factoids about Sirius. British songwriter Alan Parsons composed it on an electronic keyboard known as a clavinet. He then fed it into a computer musical instrument. Specifically, it's a Fairlight Model CMI synthesizer, where he then created a loop of that clavinet piece, and that loop became the foundation of Sirius. Parsons and his collaborator, Eric Wolfson, are credited songwriters on the track, but unlike songs or music that's used in commercials or movies, they didn't get a financial windfall despite numerous other teams around the world besides the Bulls adopting Sirius at their sporting events. And that's because public performance royalties are only a fractional amount when compared to what an artist gets paid for television and movie royalties. Not to worry, though, as Parsons got his paycheck when the track was actually listed as the leadoff track on the 1995 CD ESPN Presents Jock Rock Volume 2. And I do have to ask Michaela while she's looking at me here, just wondering how the Bulls are doing this year and waiting for her to tell me in my ear. And she says the same as last year. And were they good were they good at all last year, Michaela? Yeah, she told me in my ear, about as good as the Chicago Bears were, and they finished last in their division. So 7 minutes past 3 o'clock on Hawk Radio. A few minutes ago here on the Tampa Turntable Sessions, I mentioned that in the 66-year history of the Billboard Hot 100 pop chart so far, there's only been 25 instrumental titles to make it all the way to number one. 1962 saw the most, with three different titles. The first up came from British clarinetist Bernard Stanley Bilk, who performed as Mr. Acker Bilk with his composition entitled Stranger on the Shore. It's a song that Bilk and his distinctive appearance of having a goatee, a bowler hat, and a striped waistcoat swore was written on a scrap of paper while he was riding in a taxi cab. The jury's still out on that one. And while his tune spent only a single week at number one in late May, it was awarded with being named Billboard's overall number one single for 1962, as it sold over 45 million copies on 45. And check this out. Stranger on the Shore was the opening shot fired in the quote-unquote British invasion of pop and rock music here in America, as it was the first title ever written and performed by a British artist to top the U.S. pop charts. By the way, an acker is a British slang term for friend. So in other words, Mr. Acker Bilk means Mr. Friend Bilk. Our second of three influential instrumentals to top out at number one in 1962 was The Stripper, composed and performed by David Rose and his orchestra. Recorded 4 years earlier in 1958, The Stripper reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100 in July of 1962. It's certified gold for having initially sold over 500,000 copies, and it finished the year at number five, ranked only four songs behind the previously talked about Stranger on the Shore from Mr. Acker Bilk. With a heavy jazz influence and its especially prominent trombone slides, it's no wonder why Rose chose to name it The Stripper, since it has an overall sound that suggests the feel of music used to accompany a striptease artist. Okay, sure, striptease artist. As for David Rose, he was a four-time Emmy Award winner, having wrote the music on many TV series that you've probably heard of. Leave It to Beaver, Little House on the Prairie, Bonanza, and Highway to Heaven. The third and final instrument, number one instrumental from 1962, comes from the final 2 weeks of that year. An instrumental from the British invasion group, the Tornadoes. It features out-of-space sounding effects, and it's called Telstar. And it's named for the first communication satellite, which was launched shortly before the song was written. As reported in the magazine, The Observer Music Monthly, the Tornadoes were a journeyman club band and, frankly, didn't care much for the sound of the recording. But then after their producer, Joe Meek, added his own distinctive magic by using an overdubbed clavioline, clavioline. It's a clavioline keyboard. It provoked the spooky space effect sounds, while a backwards tape of a flushing toilet evoked all the majesty of a space-bound rocket. And when it happened, the band members then were strapped in for the ride. By the way, Joe Meek got the idea to use the clavioline after being intrigued by the sound of hearing the Hammond organ on Dave Baby Cortez's The Happy Organ, which, if you'll recall, was the first all-instrumental recording to reach number one on the Billboard Hot 100 Pop chart just 3 years prior. Finally, because of Telstar's success, Joe Meek attempted to capitalize on it and produce a lyrical version of the song, calling it Magic Star, and sung by an English singer-musician, Kenny Hollywood Plows.
Magic Star above, send a message to my love.
The song failed to launch, and it was a commercial disappointment. Success, however, did not elude our next title from being one of the most longest-lasting influential instrumentals from 1962. It comes to us from Booker T. Jones and his group, who were the house band for the Memphis soul music label Stax Records. The group were the studio musicians on many of the recordings from Wilson Pickett, Otis Redding, and Isaac Hayes. And I'm, of course, talking about Booker T and the MGs, and what music critic Richie Unterberger described as, quote, one of the most popular instrumental rock and soul songs ever. Utilizing the popular music technique called the 12-bar blues progression, the arrangement features a rippling Hammond M3 organ line played by frontman Booker T, who wrote it when he was only 17 years old. Although Jones wrote the progression when he was 17, the actual recording was largely improvised, however, in the studio. As the guys were calling it a night after finishing recording the tune, the owner of Stax Records, Jim Stewart, asked them to listen what he'd recorded on one particular take. They listened, but weren't as impressed as Jim, who then asked them, well, if he wanted to release it, what would you guys want to call it? Booker replied, Green Onions. When Pullman wanted to know why, Booker T replied, quote, because that is the nastiest thing I can think of, and it's something you throw away. For the world's sake in music, be glad Jim Stewart did not throw it away, because here now on the Tampa Turntable Sessions is the influential instrumental Green Onions from Booker T and the MGs on Hawk Radio. Whoop. The Average White Band on Hawk Radio with Pick Up the Pieces. And apart from being the title that's shouted several times throughout the tune, it's technically an instrumental still. And fittingly, as our topic today is influential instrumentals on this Tampa Turntable Sessions. I am your host, the aging teen idol, Mike Frazier, streaming live from Ybor City. On the campus of Hillsborough Community College. The Average White Band, by most accounts, including mine, can be considered one-hit wonders, since they never achieved even the closest success with any of their other singles, as they did with Pick Up the Pieces. It was their lone number one title, having climbed to the coveted top of the U.S. pop charts in February 1975, selling over 500,000 copies, while also peaking at number four in Canada and number six in their native United Kingdom. Yeah, that's right, you heard me. You heard me right. In spite of their name, Average White Band was the rarest of the musical species. A band out of Scotland, United Kingdom, that specialized in R&B funk. By the way, Pick Up the Pieces is the 15th most sampled song in music history, according to Blues and Soul, which is a British music magazine. And before Average White Band was 1962's Green Onions from Booker T and the MGs, a group who took their name from the British MG sports car. But when their employer, Stax Records, expressed disapproval, they instead claimed the initials as Memphis Group. And that worked, since it was where Stax was located at in Tennessee. Finally, worth mentioning about Green Onions, it took the single about 17 years after its original 1962 release to finally chart in the United Kingdom, where it made its way to number 7, and that was only after a character played by Sting was seen dancing to it in the 1979 movie Quadrophenia. And what about the music playing underneath of me, you might be asking? Well, it's one to put the earmuffs on the kids for. Undoubtedly one-hit wonders in the truest sense of the word. From Belgium, it's the group. It's a group that has a Latin soul. It's a Belgium group of Latin soul studio musicians who were definitely one-hit wonders, known as the Shakachas. It's the influential instrumental that's entitled Jungle Fever. It features a tribal groove with 9 breakdowns where a woman moans very suggestively in Spanish. The moaning continues over the music as the song continues to a close, but at the end, it's accompanied by some grunts from a guy. It's pretty obvious what's going on here in the song, I think. And yet, even with its overt sexual overtones, Jungle Fever was still a pretty big hit. It went to number 8 here in the US, where it got a lot of airplay on the R&B radio, and it sold over 500,000 copies of the single. The Spanish moaning throughout the instrumental is mostly just cries of passion. A few of them translate to I que fiebre, which means oh, what a fever. Dime, dale, dime. Tell me, come on, tell me. Suave, suave, suave. Soft, 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 soft. The Shakachas with Jungle Fever on Hawk Radio. Up shortly on the Tampa Turntable Sessions is, well, another memorable piece of work from the 1970s, and I say that in a good way. Specifically 1972, it's American studio musician and keyboardist virtuoso Stan Free performing with his all-instrumental band who called themselves Hot Butter. With a rendition of a particularly peculiar-sounding melody that was entirely generated using a Mood synthesizer. An influential instrumental single that became an international hit, selling 1.4 million copies in France, 250,000 in the UK, and another 1.75 million across the rest of this planet. It reached number one on the top 40 charts in Australia, France, Germany, the Netherlands, Norway, and Switzerland, where it took residency in Switzerland at that number one spot for an incredible 10 weeks straight. They like hot butter there in Switzerland. It climbed into the top 10 here, both in the US and Canada. And what we're going to hear, again, from Hot Butter, it's a song called Popcorn. It's coming up. Or is it funnier to say Popcorn and Hot Butter is coming up? But first up, though, is Herb Alpert, the only musician to hit number one on the Billboard 100 as both a vocalist for This Guy's in Love With You in 1968, then 11 years later in 1979 as an instrumentalist with Rise, the single that won the Grammy for Best Pop Instrumental Performance that year. Written by Herb's nephew, Randy Alpert, along with Andy Amers, Rise was originally composed with 128 beats per minute, However, in Herb Alpert's own words, he slowed it to about 100 beats per minute so that, quote, people could dance and hug each other at the end of the night. Ironically, it became a hit in the UK at 135 beats per minute because British club DJs didn't realize that American 12-inch singles are played at 33 revolutions per minute and not 45 RPM, which, by the way, is the European standard. Back here in North America, the track got an unexpected boost when it was used on the ABC TV soap opera General Hospital in a rather disturbing but critical scene when the character of Laura Baldwin is raped on a discotheque dance floor by Luke Spencer. In fact, the show's producers continued using the song several times a week for a few weeks afterwards until the storyline changed and then Luke and Laura became a romantic couple. Something I found funny that I came across in a 2017 Billboard magazine article, Herb Alpert refused to let Pfizer use Rise in a campaign for Viagra because the ads would have relied on the double entendre implied by the song's title. Spending 2 weeks at number one in October of 79, Herb Alpert now with Rise, another influential instrumental on the Tampa Turntable Sessions on HCC's Hawk Radio. Feel free to sing along. We'll be right back.
Just for you.
Why don't you listen to this recording with interest?
Thank you.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Former Eurythmics musician Dave Stewart, along with Dutch saxophonist Candy Dolfer, teaming up here on Lily Was Here. First released as a single in 1989, off the soundtrack for the film De Cassier. De Cassier, a movie out of Dolfer's native Netherlands. But then released here in the States the following year on her debut solo album, cleverly entitled Sexuality. Lily Was Here peaked at number 6 on the AC Adult Contemporary chart in 1991. Play it, sweetheart. Yeah. I'm talking to you, Candy, not you, Dave. Also, you just got done hearing The Horse from soul singer Cliff Nobles. It sold 1 million copies in the first 3 months of its 1968 release and went on to peak at number 2 on both the R&B and the Hot 100 Popcorn charts, while also reaching number 7 up in Canada. Now, here's the kicker about the song. Although Nobles is the title artist, that was a call to dramatic pause. Although Nobles is the title artist, he does not even perform on the single for The Horse. You see, the song was released as the B-side of the single, Love Is All Right, and is simply an instrumental version of that song without Cliff's vocal tracks. By the way, the horn section on The Horse eventually became the group MFSB, and they had their own number one influential instrumental with 1974's TSOP, The Sound of Philadelphia. But it doesn't end there. MFSB would then morph into one of the first disco and soul bands and call themselves The Tramps. And they'd go on to have incredible success with their biggest song called Disco Inferno. And coincidentally, The Horse by Cliff Nobles, peaking at number 2, was held out of the number 1 spot by the song This Guy's in Love with You from Herb Alpert, the influential instrumentalist who kicked off our set with his other number 1 song entitled Rise. Well, 38 minutes past the hour on Hawk Radio, and speaking of MFSB, I am TATIMF, the aging teen idol Mike Frazier, and along with my extraordinary TTS assistant producers Joshua, Michaela, and William, or as they prefer to be called, Mike and the Microphones, I'm guiding us through while we explore influential instrumentals on today's Tampa Turntable Sessions. Before we get back to, I don't know, all the singing that we're doing together with these instrumentals, let me say a quick hello to a couple of new listeners and watchers of TTS, the Tampa Turntable Sessions. Lori P., Jason P., Rayanne W., Craig B., Rebecca H., Brett T., Jordan F., Johnny A., and Johnny F. Thank you for clicking over to your Facebook live stream at facebook.com, Mike Frazier Radio, and watching us. Narisa L., Big Sarge, Professor Sims, thank you for listening live on Hawk Radio, as well as Dave in Lansing, Illinois, a brand new listener, listening to us on hawkradio.primostream.com, and Heather G., visiting here in Tampa, following us on Twitter or X at Real Mike Frazier. Let us know you're listening or watching by following our Facebook live streams at Mike Frazier Radio, again on X at Real Mike Frazier. Go old school and email the show at MikeFrazierRadio@gmail.com, or be an original gangster and use your phone to call in at 813-324-1048, 813-324-1048. Getting back to the music, as the next set is dedicated to a couple of influential instrumentals associated with sports. We're going to hear from the Greek composer and arranger of electronic, progressive, ambient, and classical orchestral music, who just so happened to also be an Academy Award winner. Evangelos Odysseas Papathanasiou, professionally known as Vangelis, won the 1981 Oscar for Best Original Score for his work on the film Chariots of Fire. In addition to the film's title, Chariots of Fire is also the name of the instrumental theme written by Vangelis for the movie. But here's where it gets a little interesting about that. When the single debuted at number 94 on the Billboard Hot 100 during the week ending December 12th, 1981, It was written, listed, and known in the chart as the song called, quote, Titles. However, 7 weeks later, when it moved to number 68 on the Hot 100 chart, January 12, 1982, the single began appearing on that chart under the name Chariots of Fire. And it stayed with that name for the remainder of its chart run. And that's because its name made it easier for both listeners and us radio DJs to identify the piece and tell you where it came from. After steadily climbing the Hot 100 chart for 5 months, Chariots of Fire finally made it to number one in its 22nd week on the chart, where it held that top spot for one single week. To date, it remains the only piece of music, the only piece of music by a Greek artist to top the U.S. pop charts. Chariots of Fire, or Titles, is on the way, but first, let's head back to 1972 to a number seven song from British glam rocker Gary Glitter, with his only U.S. top 10 song. I said song, with his only U.S. top 10 single. It's a musical piece that used to be wildly popular at countless professional sporting events, played during the games to fire up the spectators. I say that it used to be because ever since Gary Glitter's convictions as a sexual child sex offender, the tune, as you can imagine, has fallen out of favor, especially in the U.K., with listeners and fans, since as a co-writer, Glitter could still earn royalties whenever it's played. Now, by the way, as a state-funded entity, Hawk Radio doesn't necessarily need to pay direct licensing or royalty fees, so it's a gray area there as far as us paying Gary Glitter. Here now is the instrumental tune that often gets mistakenly called the Hey Song, since its only intelligible lyric is the exclamation of Hey, punctuated throughout the otherwise pure instrumental, but it's actually entitled Rock and Roll Part 2, an influential instrumental on the Tampa Turntable Sessions.
Hey!
These are influential instrumentals today on the Tampa Turntable Sessions on Hawk Radio. And influential instrumentals, controversially, should include this one from 1972. Soul Mikasa by Cameroonian saxophonist and songwriter Manu Dibango. Controversially, because the debate rages whether it's truly an instrumental, as it does exhibit signs of a song, including having what is arguably a clear vocal refrain, but it repeats in Dibango's native Douala language. Another controversy is whether the single can be called the first disco record, as music critics and historians have been arguing for quite a while, since 1972. It's noteworthy to mention that Soul Mikasa is the most sampled African song in African history. It's the most sampled African song in history. There you go. And that's according to a 2020 online article from okafrica.com. Thank you to my team for doing the research on that. Despite the single only reaching number 35 on the American Top 40 chart, it's probably best known for its chanted chorus, Mama Ka, Mamako, Mamasa, Mamako, Mamakosa. Mamako, Mamasa, Mamako, Mamakosa, which was adapted and put into the song from Michael Jackson called Wanna Be Starting Something. As for us, we're soon going to be stopping something, as this hour has already flown by. But before running out of time, I'm going to close out by playing two more influential instrumentals out of only 25 total that have ever reached number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 Pop chart. So, originally composed around 1965 by R&B legend Barry White, Love's Theme was recorded and released as a single 8 years later and 51 years ago in 1973 by White's massive 40-piece ensemble. 40-piece ensemble, the Love Unlimited Orchestra. It achieved number one status on the week of February 9th, 1974, and would follow suit 3 weeks later in Canada on March 2nd. Also, it went on to finish that year as America's third highest ranked single. You'll hear Love's Theme with its large string orchestra, modified guitar, and big rhythm in just a minute. Also coming up is the disco instrumental adaptation of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. But unlike Barry White, it's a one-hit wonder. From another orchestra leader and the one-time former arranger for Doc Severinsen and the Tonight Show Orchestra, we'll hear from then 23-year-old Walter Murphy and the Big Apple Band with their October 9th, 1976 number one influential instrumental called A Fifth of Beethoven. By the way, the following year, it would be featured in both the film and the 16-time platinum-selling soundtrack for 1977's Saturday Night Fever. And though Murphy only had one hit song in his career, he pivoted to writing jingles and music for TV shows. In fact, he won the 2002 Emmy Award for Outstanding Music and Lyrics for his song, You've Got a Lot to See. The song was called You've Got a Lot to See, and it's from the animated series Family Guy. A final fun fact about A Fifth of Beethoven, it was pushed out of the number one spot after only 1 week by the song Disco Duck from fellow radio DJ Rick Dees. And that was, it was the 1970s, by the way. And A Fifth of Beethoven is coming up next in just a couple of minutes. But right now, as promised on the Tampa Turntable Sessions, the influential instrumental recording, considered by music experts, to having had a major effect on the growing disco sound from the 70s. This is Barry White's Love Unlimited Orchestra with Love's Theme on HCC's Hawk Radio.
First we take a groovy record, then we add a super sound DJ. Mix it with enthusiasm, and that's the super sound today.
Radio with our final influential instrumental on this week's Tampa Turntable Sessions. And you're hearing it right now from 1971, 1972. It's the pop hit Joy that I'm walking all over right now, stepping on, crab walking through broken glass on top of. The only U.S. top single from the British instrumental group Apollo 100, and the one that was inspired by the 300-year-old classical masterpiece, Hey-Zu, Joy of Man's Desiring, from German composer Johann Sebastian Bach. Fittingly, it was released in early in the month of December in 1971, and that was the reason they did that was to capitalize on radio station airplay of holiday music during Christmas time. It worked. It sent Joy to the number 6 spot on the pop chart and number 2 on the adult contemporary chart. Well, y'all, we've hit the end of this week's show. But I hope you've enjoyed the topic of instrumentals. And that's because the team and I plan to pick this back up next week and continue exploring and hearing more of the historically popular music that has no discernible lyrics. I want you to come back and we'll all kumbaya together and sing made-up lyrics to the lyricless sing-along songs. And that's assuming we aren't impacted by Hurricane Sarah, from where Hawk Radio and this show originates from here in Tampa, Florida. It'll be part 2 of Influential Instrumentals on the Tampa Turntable Sessions. That's next Friday live, starting at 3 Eastern. Until then, know that if you missed any part of today's sessions, or if you're like me and want to relive the magic of this or any of the 3 most recent Tampa Turntable Sessions, you can check them out on demand and available to download for free from the Tampa Turntable Sessions page at hawkradio.primostream.com. That's hawkradio.primostream.com. Also, if you're on Facebook,